Welcome back. For those of you joining us just now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We are podcasting our show. You can find out more information on our website at kalw.org. Click on news, and you'll see the Your Call program listed there. That's where you can listen to our past shows, and you can subscribe to the Your Call podcast on iTunes. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org and join the conversation today by dialing in at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And now we're going to talk about climate journalism and the people who want to see climate action around the world. According to recent studies, 80 to 89% of the world's people want their governments to take stronger climate action. But many of those people don't realize that they are the overwhelming majority. So Covering Climate Now's recently launched 89% Project urges journalists to report on this 89% of people in the world who want strong climate action. And the initiative aims to present a vivid, factually grounded portrait of the global climate majority in all of its diversity and potential by featuring names, faces, and sentiments of this overwhelming majority. And the question is then, who makes up this 89%? And how should journalists amplify those voices and the solutions that they can offer to combat the climate crisis? So we're pleased to be joined by Tristan Tone, who is a member of the Kiowa tribe and editor-at-large at Grist, with a long history of indigenous journalism in the United States. Tristan previously served as editor-in-chief at the Texas Observer and indigenous affairs editor at High Country News. He's also a past president of the Indigenous Journalists Association, a 2017 Nieman Fellow, and recently was involved in the creation of the Indigenous News Alliance. So it's good to have you back on the show, Tristan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you join us. And I should also mention that later in the program, we will be joined by Mark Hertzgard, environmental correspondent of The Nation and executive director of the Global Media Collaboration Covering Climate Now that I just mentioned in the introduction here. So, Tristan, we're living in a critical moment, to say the least. Just thinking about climate change and what the Trump administration has done within just 8 months in office here, or back in office, I should say. Trump administration has aggressively rolled back environmental regulations, erased climate change from federal records and websites, has launched an organized attack on science and scientists, laid off scientists from the federal government, at the same time expanding oil, gas, mineral extraction, often at the direct expense of indigenous lands and communities. And so just given the scale and speed of what we've seen over the last 8 months, how do you assess this moment? And what do you think it means for climate and environmental journalism?
Well, yeah, big question here. I think like all journalists, we're really trying to meet the moment here as the landscape is rapidly, rapidly changing, all the points that you just highlighted. But I think generally what we're thinking about when it comes to our reporting and our work is to continue sort of doing the work of indigenous journalism and indigenous journalism when it's looking at climate, essentially for folks that are maybe hearing about indigenous journalism or how we go about our work as climate reporters. We're really, my team and other reporters, indigenous reporters, are really concerned with sort of the processes or actions that non-indigenous business or governments sort of undertake, and their impacts on indigenous communities. And as you said, there's a lot of them right now. So this is something that we're continually sort of monitoring and doing our best to roll with in this moment and try to meet audiences where they are and their concerns.
And I also want to welcome now Mark Hertzgard to the program. Mark is the environmental correspondent of The Nation and executive director of the Global Media Collaboration Covering Climate Now. And his new book is Big Red's Mercy, The Shooting of Deborah Cotton and a Story of Race in America. Mark, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm sorry to be late. I had a little trouble connecting, but I gather you can hear me all right now.
We can hear you, and better late than never. It's good to have you join us. Well, you may have heard, I just asked Tristan kind of what he makes of this moment, given these really just onslaught of actions from the Trump administration against climate action, climate scientists, and in favor of fossil fuel extraction, burning, production. So I'm curious what you would make of this moment for climate and environmental journalism.
It's a very dark moment for not just journalism, but for humanity, because the Earth is rapidly accelerating towards climate breakdown. And we see that in the record kinds of extreme weather events getting deadlier and more destructive as we go along. And look, there's no surprise about what Donald Trump is doing. He campaigned on a promise to, you know, drill, baby, drill. Our colleagues at the Washington Post did a very powerful investigative expose last spring during the campaign, in which they reported that Trump, during a meeting with oil company CEOs, said, "You guys give me $1 billion for my presidential campaign, and I'll give you whatever you want once I'm in power." And that's pretty much the way it's rolled out. I think the troubling thing for journalism is that we are not meeting this moment. Too many of the news organizations, and I mean not just here in the United States, but globally, are not providing the kind of sustained and high-profile climate coverage that the citizens of this world deserve. Now, I get it. Look, I'm a journalist. I'm not blind to the fact that every news organization in the world now is facing a collapsing business model, which means that there's smaller editorial staffs. We've got two huge wars in Gaza and the Ukraine, and then there's the fire hose of rhetoric and stuff coming out of the Trump White House every day. There are genuinely strong news events. We have got to cover those things, but we've also got to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time, and we should not be ignoring climate change. There is something deeply wrong with the global news industry if we are de facto ignoring the fact that our common planetary home is on fire.
Well, Mark, I've mentioned already now that covering climate now, the 89% project. So I wanted to ask you a couple questions there. First of all, where does that figure come from? 89%, 80 to 89%. And then can you talk more about what that 89% project is all about?
Sure. The 80 to 89% project is, in a sense, a pushback against all the dynamics that you and Tristan have been talking about. And by the way, I'm very happy to be on here with Tristan. He has done, folks who aren't aware of it, have a look at his work. He won a Covering Climate Now Journalism Award either last year or the year before. So it's not that there's not great journalism out there, but it's the larger outlets that have the biggest megaphones that aren't doing so much. And so the 89% project is our way at Covering Climate Now to get our news outlet partners around the world to focus on, I think, one of those the most surprising stories that I've seen in 30 years of climate reporting, which is, as you mentioned, that 80 to 89% of the world's people actually want their governments to take stronger climate action. But, and here's the kicker, most of those people do not know that they are the majority, the overwhelming majority, 8 out of 10. They think they're the minority. And so the 89% project is a reporting project aimed at just imprinting this fact onto the public conversation and the public consciousness that, in fact, most people want this action. And you asked where the data comes from. People can go to our website, Covering Climate Now, and click on the vertical that will take you to the 89% project, and you'll see all the social science. But there's more and more studies. The main study comes from Nature Climate Change. That's the one that found that 80 to 89% of the world's public want this. But there's studies also from Oxford. The European Commission just issued one. And it's interesting, pretty much all of these studies remarkably consistent that it's 80 to 89% of the public who want stronger climate action.
And Tristan Attone, curious your take on this project, the 89% project. What do you think about it as a journalist who's covering indigenous communities specifically? What do you think it might do for these communities and for elevating the issues that these communities face uniquely?
Well, I think it's a great project to be, imprinting this idea, as Mark said. I agree with everything that Mark has as just said about us not meeting the moment. I think that again, because of the amount of news that's going on and the siloing of climate coverage in so many ways from the rest of the news cycle, I think we put ourselves in a pretty detrimental place. So being able to have a project that is going to start linking newsrooms up and linking stories up together, I think is a really, really great start. And I think speaks to also the kind of thinking that has to go into doing better climate reporting is that we need to be thinking differently about how we're reaching audiences. We need to be thinking differently about how we're going about our work. This isn't this isn't an issue where it's sort of like you support climate change or you don't. I mean, we all want the planet to survive. This is a planetary survival story at this point, and I think that requires a lot of fresh thinking and a lot of fresh reporting, in order to continue to drive that point home.
You're listening to Your Call's One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind, and we're talking about how journalists are covering climate change and the 89% project, trying to mobilize those folks who, and 89% of them around the world, say they want to see more climate action to help remind them that they are, in fact, in the majority on this issue. If you are part of that majority, if you have questions about how climate journalists cover this vital topic, the number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or email any questions or comments you have to yourcall@kalw.org. Mark, I want to ask you about the 89%. Who are the people behind those numbers? How do they vary, if they do vary, across countries, gender, generational lines? And what kinds of action do they say they want to see governments take?
I'm smiling to hear that question because it's such a perfect lead-in to what I wanted to say, which is that, we kicked off the 89% project in April with the first phase, and the first phase of the reporting was just trying to get that number out there. Gosh, there's 80 to 89%. It's a game-changing fact. Now, the second new phase, next phase, I should say, of the project is just beginning now, and it's looking at exactly the questions that you're asking. So we are in the second phase. We are trying to put people behind the numbers, who, put faces really onto those numbers. Who are those people? How do the numbers differ by country? How do they differ by gender and race and age and so forth? So we did a soft launch of this next phase of the 89% project a couple weeks ago with an interview that newsmaker interview that Covering Climate Now did with the global music star John Batiste. And John had written a new climate song to mark the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina on August 29, a storm that ravaged John Batiste's hometown of New Orleans. And so we asked John about this 89% figure, and he said, yeah, he's definitely part of the 89%. So we are now going to be, in the coming weeks leading up to the COP30 UN Climate Summit in Brazil in November, we will be doing a lot of reporting from all around the world, again, on who are these people? How do the numbers differ by country, for example? So, we're speaking here in the United States. Our number is 74%. 74% of the public wants stronger climate action. So we're, noticeably below the global average of 80 to 89%, probably because the United States is itself a petro state with very strong oil and gas interests in the economy and the politics. And one of the things that the reporting in this next phase will look at is also, well, how does this number differ between men and women, between younger people and older people, between richer people and less well-off people? And so reporters are going to be doing that kind of basically person on the street interviewing on the ground. But I say to everyone listening, if you would like to tell your story about this to a reporter, please get in touch with us. The AFP Global News Agency, in particular, is looking for people to talk about what their quote unquote tipping points were. What was it in a given individual's life that led them to go from being part of the 89%, which is, sort of a passive, yes, I'd like the government to do more, a passive position, to an active position of, oh, I have to do something more as well, whether it be changing my own personal consumption patterns or changing my political involvement, who I vote for, whether I go to protests and so forth. So again, listeners who are interested, please write to us, editors at coveringclimatenow.org, and let us know if you want to talk to a reporter.
We'll put that information on our website as well. We're speaking with Mark Hertzgard, environment correspondent of The Nation and the executive director of the global media collaboration Covering Climate Now. We're also speaking with Tristan Atone, who is a member of the Kiowa tribe, an editor at large at Grist with a long history of indigenous journalism in the U.S. Tristan previously served as editor-in-chief at the Texas Observer and indigenous affairs editor at High Country News. And as we heard Mark mention, he was awarded the 2024 Covering Climate Journalism Award. Tristan, I wanted to turn back to you. As I mentioned, you're the editor-at-large at Grist, which is a thriving nonprofit dedicated to coverage of a wide range of climate-related topics. And I saw that there's the 2025 Grist 50 list on your website highlighting the work of 50 people who are making a real difference in moving the needle. Can you talk more about that, how that might tie in with this 89% project? Any stories you want to highlight and what you're doing to try to elevate those stories and these voices?
Well, the Grist 50 is highlighting people who are involved in their communities and pushing solutions. And I think it again ties into sort of larger aims by climate reporters to try to bring more solutions-oriented reporting to people. When I talk to people about the work that I do, most of the time folks ask if I'm depressed. That is true, obviously, but still, I digress. I think that trying to find the best ways to reach people about climate and about the solutions that are available, and the ways in which they can become involved is some of the best work that we can be doing. And again, I think continuing to evolve how we're thinking about that, how we're reaching audiences, and again, meeting that moment with everything that's going on, I think signals to me that there's likely a fundamental shift here in terms of how we go about our work and in the journalism that we're doing, which is a very exciting place to be in. Scary too, but we have a lot of responsibility on our shoulders right now. And I think as trust in media continues to take a nosedive at this point, it's on us to be doing the very best possible work we can, because our planet is dependent on us.
I want to ask you both just some basic questions, thinking about how climate journalism should be moving forward in this moment. And first of all, what does it mean to reach audiences in a different way? And how should journalists be thinking about or thinking differently about how to cover climate and better ways to connect with these audiences? And Tristan, maybe I'll start with you on that. So what's your take on what needs to change in terms of how journalism is covering climate?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing is a bit of a reassessment in sort of why we do what we do. I think generally reporters are sort of brought up and into the craft by thinking about the reason that we do the work that we do as reporters is in service of democracy and upholding these democratic systems and orders. I don't think that that's what we're actually involved in climate journalism, though. Obviously, democracy is part and parcel in the work that that's important to all of us. But when it comes to climate crisis here, I think we need to be quite clear that there are many democratic institutions in the United States and around the world that violate and have violated the rights of people, of the environment, and beyond. And that tells us that we need to be approaching the work differently, I think. And how we go about doing that, I think, is a longer process in which I'm hoping more reporters will be more involved in and thinking about and talking about. But that's really the big one right now, is that we're dealing with a very different sort of situation than our previous reporters and have come before us for the last 100 years have. This is completely different. We need different tools, and we need different thinking.
And Mark Hertzgard, same question for you. What do you think climate journalism needs to do differently now in terms of reaching audiences, which audiences to reach and how to reach them?
At Covering Climate Now, we are strong believers that more and better climate journalism is itself an essential climate solution. And as Tristan and others have said, we do need to be talking about solutions. We have a sort of a three-step mantra of what makes good climate journalism, which is that the best climate journalism, it humanizes the climate story, it localizes the climate story, and it solutionizes the climate story. When I say humanize, it's obvious, make the story about people, not about parts per million and abstract scientific concepts. Localize is both geographical and emotional. Localize, you know, put the story in a place that people can relate to. So again, it's not abstract, it's about what they're experiencing. And solutionize, obviously not proper English, but you know, make sure that you talk about how to fix it, which is not cheerleading, by the way. It's telling the whole story. Yes, the problem, but also the solutions. And, you know, Tristan mentioned that this is a different moment than journalists in the past have encountered. And in this regard, that's really has been a handicap that for decades, really, for as long as I've been in the business, the idea that a reporter would talk about solutions, editors would slam that down hard because they'd say, oh, you're an advocate. Oh, you're sugarcoating the story. You're cheerleading for this. And it's like, no, we're telling the entire story, the half the story about what's wrong, but also the other half about how to fix it. And what you do with solutions is you interrogate those solutions in your news coverage. You don't cheerlead for them. And you call out false solutions, by the way. That's also solutions reporting. And I think the more we do that, the more that the public will respond to us. And that, again, is something that we believe with this 89% project. It's not just a great story to reveal this fundamentally different politics at the base of the climate story. It's also smart commerce. It's smart branding for your news organization. When 80 to 89% of the public wants action, guess what? Those are not marginal. That's not a sliver of your audience. That is your audience. And you need to be showing that audience that you see them, you hear them, you respect them. You're going to put their names and their faces and their opinions in your coverage. And guess what? When you do, they're going to watch and read that coverage. They're going to send it to their mom and say, hey, I was in the news today. And they're going to pay attention to what we're doing. And eventually, one hopes they'll also realize that if you want good journalism, you have to help pay for it.
Well, Tristan, I know you've served as editor-in-chief at the Texas Observer, an Indigenous Affairs editor at High Country News, also a past president of the Indigenous Journalists Association. Just briefly, because we're almost out of time, curious how you would see a distinction between Indigenous journalism and non-Indigenous journalism, especially when, as it relates to climate change and the environment.
Well, I mean, I think simply put, Indigenous journalism is reporting that seeks to serve Indigenous self-determination and sovereignty rather than, for instance, American democracy. It doesn't mean that it's anti-democratic, but it recognizes that, again, democratic institutions have been responsible for numerous human rights violations which involve Indigenous people. As it goes for climate, I think Indigenous journalists might understand a lot of the concepts that we're talking about slightly differently. As Mark said, we have to interrogate those solutions. So thinking of sustainability, for instance, we can, you know, I think there's a large train of thought here that thinks of sustainability as a goal that really further entrenches capitalism and colonialism. You know, we're highlighting stories that show how green development poses catastrophic threats to Indigenous communities for the benefit of non-Indigenous peoples and institutions. So I think this is maybe where we might differ from Western reporters. But again, I think this is also where we are being able to meet and think differently about what our futures look like together and what kind of work we do to get there.
Well, so grateful for the reporting. Yeah, Mark, just briefly, a few seconds here.
Here, here. That's all I want to say.
All right. That's very brief and well said. I just want to thank you both for your efforts to cover this issue. You just heard from Tristan Atone, member of the Kiowa tribe and editor at large at Grist, and also has done reporting for PBS, NPR, Al Jazeera, and Indian Country Today, among other outlets. Tristan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And also Mark Hertzgard, environment correspondent of The Nation, and the executive director of the Global Media Collaboration Covering Climate Now. And his new book is Big Red's Mercy, The Shooting of Deborah Cotton and a Story of Race in America. Thank you, Mark, for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
That is our show. To listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast, visit our webpage via kalw.org. You can also find us on iTunes and give us a review there. Follow us on social media too, and email any show ideas or feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.